So we're continuing our study of Malachim Aleph, and we're in the middle of Perek Beis, up to Pasuk Chaf Ches, where the young king Shlomo had just dealt with his brother, his half brother Adoniah, and because Adoniah had asked to marry Avishag, who was David's nursemaid. Even though he went through Bathsheba trying to get through to Shlomo, Shlomo saw through that plan and saw that it was Adoniah taking a step towards, usurping power. And so Shlomo dealt with Adoniah and had Adoniah killed. And to Avyasar, who was the current Kohen Gadol, Avyasar had sided with Adoniah. So Shlomo removed him from power and he basically sent him into an exile. Pasuk Chaf Ches continues the story. Vashmua ba ad Yoav. The shmua, the rumor. It's not really good to translate it as rumor. It means the word that which can be heard. The news reached Yoav. So there's a little bit of difference of interpretation. I think we would say the most obvious interpretation, which is what the Radak and the Mitzudas David says, is the immediate activity that just took place, meaning the fact that Adoniah was killed and the fact that Avyasar was removed from his position of Kuna Gedola and kind of put into house arrest in Anatot, that reached Yoav, and so Yoav gets nervous. Rashi says that what actually Yoav heard about is that somehow he heard about the last will and testament that David had given to Shlomo, that part of his last words to Shlomo was the fact that he needs to deal with Yoav. He has to see fit to deal with Yoav because, and as we had explained, that David had felt throughout his entire life that even though Yoav was deserving of punishment, David himself could not punish Yoav. Whether David, however you understand that David wasn't powerful enough to punish Yoav, David wasn't powerful enough to lead without having Yoav next to him. But with the regime change, Yoav could be dealt with. So Rashi understands that that's what Yoav heard. That Yoav heard that David's command was that he should be dealt with. And so either way you explain it, Yoav is clearly nervous. So Vashmua ba'ad Yoav, ki Yoav nata achari Adoniah, v'achari av shalom lo nata. Yoav had leaned himself, nata, he had leaned or sided with Adoniah, v'achari Avshalom lo nata, but he did not follow after Avshalom. Why that phrase has to be there is a question, because clearly he's being held accountable for the fact that he, at least on the surface level, he's being held accountable because he's natach ari Adoniah. Because he sided with Adoniah, that's why he's kind of, in his mind, he's next in line to be dealt with. If Shlomo first dealt with Adoniah, then dealt with Avyasar, the next one to be dealt with is him. Why does the pasuk have to go out of its way to tell us, v'achari Avshalom lo nata, he didn't follow after Avshalom? I think it's highlighting the idea that on the surface, in Shlomo's mind, it's not that Yoav was, I don't want to use the word insulting. Had Yoav only followed after Avshalom, so that's something that Shlomo could have overlooked. To take part, even in the rebellion of Avshalom, which was in the end squashed, but to have taken part in that rebellion was not an affront to Shlomo. It was an affront only to David. But to have taken part in the rebellion of Adoniah, or the almost rebellion of Adoniah, that in some way was an affront to Shlomo, and that kind of that gives the license, the initial license of Shlomo to take action. Vayanas Yoav el Ohal Hashem. Yoav's response is to run to the tent of Hashem, presumably. It's talking about the Mishkan, which was in Givon. Vayachazek bekarnos hamizbeach, and he grabs hold of the corners of the mizbeach, of the corners of the altar. That, as we've mentioned before, the Mizbeach is a symbol of kapara, and holding on to the Mizbeach, Yoav was trying to seek the protection of the Mizbeach, and that when the psukim in the Torah describe the potential for the Mizbeach to provide protection, the Yoav seems to have been mistaken in that Yoav did not kill as we've mentioned before, and as we mentioned in this parak, the two individuals that Yoav killed b'mezid, he killed on purpose. The Mizbeach does not have the ability to protect someone who killed on purpose. And perhaps the understanding that the Mizbeach protects someone who killed, maybe that's only talking about a protection provided to a Kohen who's in the middle of serving in the Mishkan, but wouldn't extend itself to Yoav. Yoav is but he's of the opinion that this somehow is going to stall. This is somehow going to buy him time. Maybe it's going to be, some of Farshim understand, maybe, if he's in the Ohel Hashem, so Shlomo wouldn't want to make a scene in front of such a holy place. And so this is Yoav's idea. Pasuk Chaftes, Vayugad l'melech Shlomo. It was told to the king Shlomo, Kinas Yoav Elo al Hashem, that Yoav had run away to the tent of Hashem. Vine etz haMizbeach, and he's right next to the Mizbeach. Vayishlach Shlomo b'nayeh ben Yada lemor lech pega bo. So the initial scene, or the initial report that Yoav is there, that doesn't deter Shlomo at all. Shlomo sends forth Benayo ben Yoyada, exactly as he had sent forth Benayo ben Yoyada to take care of and to kill Adoniah, saying, right, he said to him, Lech Pegabo, go and strike him down. And presumably we would understand the same way that we understood that previously. How could Ben Yoyada go? He's a Kohen. Either he doesn't have to actually come in contact with the dead body, he could just mortally wound him, or he's just in charge of arranging for it to happen, or that mitzvah samelech, he has to listen to the mitzvah of the melech, even if it means becoming tamei. Vayavo b'nayahu elo al Hashem, so b'nayahu arrives at the tent of Hashem, vayomer elav, and he says, to him, meaning Benayahu turns to Yoav and says, Ko amar hamelech tse. So has said the king, go out. Now, we didn't hear that. We just heard Shlomo say, Lech pegabo, go and kill him. So this could be Benayahu, a kind of taking some steps of his own just to try to, he understands what he has to do, but maybe Benayahu doesn't want to actually have Yoav get killed in the actual Ohel Hashem, in the actual Mishkan. And so he's kind of pleading with him, say, go out. Vayomer, and Yoav says back to him, Lo, ki fo amos. No, because I'm going to die here. I'm not willing to leave. In the sense that Yoav might still be trying to at least make the claim, or at least believe in himself, that if he stays next to the Mizbeach, he won't actually be put to death, and so this will allow him to stall longer. There are some other interpretations that why Yoav was trying to stall. That Yoav was maybe trying to send a message to Shlomo that when, at least the first time, when Yoav made the decision to kill the first general that he killed, when he killed Avner, who was Shaul's general, and he did it b'mezid, so while David wasn't able to punish him physically, David did give forth a curse. And so Yoav was trying to delay because he was trying to send a message back to Shlomo that to some extent I've already been punished. The fact that there's a curse against my household for generations, and whether and if Shlomo wants to take care of punishing him, at least he should try to remove the curse, and maybe Shlomo actually did that. Maybe Shlomo took the curse upon him, because in the end, when you read the details of the curse that David had originally given to the children of Yoav and to Yoav and his household, that might have applied to Shlomo's children. So we have Yoav trying to stall, and Benayahu is caught here. And so the pasuk continues, "Vayashav Benayahu es hamelech davar lemor." So Benayahu sent back word to the king, saying, "Ko diber Yoav v'cho anani." This is what Yoav said. This is what Yoav spoke. This was his answer to me, which perhaps seems strange, because Shlomo never asked for any dialogue to happen, right? Shlomo just gave the command to Benayahu, just carry it out. Benayahu is caught because he obviously wants to follow the mitzvah samelech, and we've already seen that Benayahu is ready and willing to carry out the command of the new young king, even if it means putting someone to death. So it's not like he's hesitant to pull the trigger, but it's just the scene of it happening in the Ohal Hashem. So Benayahu doesn't feel that it's, and I didn't see any Mefarish say, he doesn't feel that it's an affront to Shlomo to just try to like double check if this is what Shlomo really wants to happen.
Not clearly.
I mean, no. There's no, you know, generally that's not where killings to happen. But
I know if you're going to kill someone, does it really matter where you're doing it? But at the same time,
right? It almost is. It's almost something. It sounds like it doesn't sit well in like your
right.
I mean, not that killing ever sits well, but even within the realm of justice, it doesn't sound. It doesn't sound appropriate. They had the. Not that it happened often, but the procedure by a woman who was a sota, so it's a procedure that has to be done in the Beis HaMikdash via a kohen, and if she was actually guilty and she's drinking these, you know, the waters that they erased the name of Hashem, and put it into this water, it's bitter water. And if she would drink it, so her, you know, it's kind of graphic, her belly would descend and you know, be no good. So they, if I'm not mistaken in the description, I think they talk about like moving her away from the actual courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, so that, you know, it wouldn't happen
right there.
But I don't know if there's any extra, let's say, prohibition per se. So Yoav was not, the crimes that he committed were not, they weren't with warning, they weren't with witnesses. So he couldn't be prosecuted via means of the Beis Din, of the Sanhedrin, in a court of law. He perhaps could have been judged by the other option, which is to be judged directly by the king. But David had made the decisions that he just wasn't able to. And we had made the argument that maybe David needed Yoav. He needed that power. Yoav is not 100% bad. Yoav accomplished a lot of good. You can make the argument that while the rebellion of Absalom, David's son, did not end in the way that David wanted it to end, because David wanted his son to remain alive, he did want the rebellion to end. You can make the argument that perhaps the reason why the rebellion came to an end was because of Yoav and Yoav's leadership and Yoav's involvement. And while David didn't want it to end the exact way that it was, Yoav was a necessary component for David's success. And that's why David felt that he couldn't punish Yoav, and that's why he gave the mandate to Shlomo to carry it out. So Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayomer lo hamelech, the king responds, Aseik asher diber, ufagabo ukivarto. Do as I told you, meaning the negotiations are over. Do as I told you, and strike him and bury him. So, I think it's important to note there doesn't seem to be any anger on the side of Shlomo. Shlomo doesn't seem... You could imagine Shlomo might have been upset at Benayahu for going off script. But that doesn't appear... Again, we don't have every word that was said, but in the description, it doesn't appear that he's upset. But he's, at the same time, he's directive that I'm not interested in taking this any longer and negotiating any further. You have to go ahead and carry it out, ukvarto, and bury him. Vasirosa demechinam. And by doing so, vasirosa, you will remove the demechinam, the innocent blood, asher shafach Yoav me'alai u'me'al beis avi, that Yoav spilled me'alai from on me u'me beis avi and from on my father's house. That it's a reference, as we're going to, we'll say their names in the next pasuk, but when Yoav killed the two generals, Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yeser, when he killed them, in each story, it was clear what David, perhaps, you know, what could have been perceived that it was David who gave the command to kill these individuals, and that was not the case, and therefore there was a stain upon David, and David had to try, you know, in biblical ways to try to have positive PR, for lack of a better term, to try to get the message out that it was not from him. And the fact that Shlomo is mentioning this now may be a sign that there still were people in the nation, still were people in Israel, who thought that David had what to do with killing the general who was the Avner, who was the general of Yoav of Shaul, and then Shaul's son Ishbosheth, and then Amasa, who had been the general to Avshalom in his rebellion. And what's, again, we're talking about killing someone here, so it's hard to use the word nice. I think what's nice is that we have the young, in such an expression, the young king Shlomo views himself as an extension, as a continuation of his father, which is what's supposed to happen, but might not be so natural. B, we keep harping on the fact that Shlomo was so young, but just in his language where he says Vasirosa demechina asher shafach Yoav me'alai from ami. How is it on me? If you sit there and do the math, at the time that Avner was killed, Shlomo, you know, wasn't even a twinkle in David's Shlomo, and the whole story of Bathsheba is years before, and the rebellion with Avshalom, you know, Shlomo's perhaps a little boy at the time, and it's something distant from him, but no, if he is the physical and spiritual legacy of his father David, then it's on him. And it's a stain on him, even though he had nothing to do with it. But that's how he views it. And he's continuing in this response to Benayahu, Pasuk Lamed Beis, V'heshiv Hashem es damo al rosho. This is Hashem, meaning you and I, we're shliach of Hashem, Hashem will be returning his blood, Yoav's blood, al rosho, upon his head, asher paga b'shnei anashim tzadikim v'tovim Mimenu, because he struck two men, tzadikim, righteous, tovim, good, mimenu, tovim mimenu, better than him. Vehargim becherev, and he killed them via means of a sword. The term tzadikim v'tovim mimenu, it's, I think we understand it more on a subjective level, at least in terms of Amasa. So Amasa was the general to Avshalom in his rebellion against his own father. So you have to, you know, there was definitely something off with Amasa that he was willing to side with one of David's sons and take out the sitting king. But after the rebellion was put down, Amasa was willing to apologize. Amasa was willing to swear his allegiance to David, to do tshuva. And so Yoav, he's considered to still be more righteous and good than Yoav was. And Yoav killed them by means of the sword. And the pasuk notes again, Va'avi David lo yada. My father David did not know. My father David was not aware. David was under the impression that Avner was now with him and on his side. And that was going to continue David's approach of getting all of Klal Yisrael to be on board with him as their king. And David was not aware that Amasa was killed. David also thought that Amasa was now on his side post the rebellion. Now it'll be a way of uniting the kingdom again. That's right. Vavi David lo yada, and then they're named as Avner ben Ner Sar Tzva Yisrael. Avner, the son of Ner, who was the officer, the chief of the army of all of Israel, because when Shaul was king of all of Israel, and this was his general. Ves Amasa ben Yeser Sar Tzva Yehuda. Amasa ben Yeser, who's considered to be a general among Yehuda, again highlighting the fact that it was during Avshalom's rebellion, where he was an officer amongst Yehuda, they were making their impact, and the rebellion definitely had support from all the tribes. But initially, he started out from Yehuda. Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Vishavu demehem berosh Yoav. Their blood shall be returned onto the head of Yoav. Uverosh zaro liolam, and this will carry forth towards his children forever, this legacy, this horrific legacy. And at the same time, because I, Shlomo, am standing in the place of my father and finally carrying out justice, v'ula David, ula zaro, ula veso, ula chiso, ye shalom ad olam me'im Hashem. That to David and his children and his household and his throne, there shall be peace ad olam forever, me'im Hashem, from Hashem. That this is not Shlomo acting, you know, selfishly. This is considered to be, and Shlomo's not held accountable for this. This is considered to be proper and carrying out justice. Again, it took time for the justice to come, and this is just the right. Benayahu and Shlomo are the shlichim, are the messengers to carry out the justice of Hashem. Pasuk Lamed Dalid, Vayal Benayahu ben Yoyada, Vayifka bo Vayimiseu. So Benayahu ben Yoyada, right? He heard this response from Shlomo. He went up, he struck Yoav, and he killed him. Vayikaver beveiso bamidbar, and he buried him in his house bamidbar, in the desert. So the first part of that phrase saying vayikaver beveiso makes sense. Bamidbar seems a little strange. Who would live in a desert? So all the Mepharshim seem to say that we shouldn't understand it based on the literal interpretation. Rashi actually says something beautiful, again, highlighting this complex character of Yoav, something that we didn't necessarily know about Yoav even throughout Sefer Shmuel. But Be'soba Midbar, that the word Midbar, the word desert, is a description of the type of house that he had. Rashi says, Shahaya Be'so Hefker Kimidbar La'aniyim. His house was hefker. His house was just, you know, open door policy, like a midbar, like everyone has access to the desert. So too, poor people always had access to the house of Yoav. And again, it's not hard for us to understand such a description, because Yoav is this complex character where he does a lot of things that are great and he does a lot of things that are not great. The Mepharshim also pick up on the fact that we hear about his burial, specifically Beveso, that there is the Torah tells us that we have a commandment to try to bury an individual quickly. The Torah, we learn that Kavor Tekvarenu Bayomahu, we actually learn that about those people who Beis Din has to punish with capital punishment. So that Beis Din, after they carry out the capital punishment, they need to try to bury the individual as quickly as possible. And the Gemara also learns out that the various forms of people who received capital punishment were buried in their own like section of the cemetery. And that even to the extent that there are four different forms, four different methods of capital punishment, and there's a level of severity that the, you know, the severest crime receives the severest form of death penalty. And people who were put to death by Beis Din in different methods shouldn't be buried with each other. That those who were killed with skila should be buried together. And those who were, you have to also remember, it didn't happen often. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin reminds us that The first opinion in the Mishnah says that if a Sanhedrin killed someone once in 7 years, they were known as a bloody court. And then the second opinion in the Mishnah, it was Rabbi Akiva, said that if it was once in 70 years, they were known as a bloody. So it doesn't happen often. But the idea of it is that they should be buried separately. If I'm not mistaken, Rabbi Schechter explains that that's how it developed, that we have the practice over the centuries where we get buried with groups, right? That groups of people have like a whole section in a cemetery, because the presumption is that if you're part of a certain, you know, group, that you are probably similar. The idea being is that, you know, people should, even in burial, you should be buried with people who are similar in terms of your mitzvah observance. So it all depends who Yoav is when he gets buried. If he gets buried as a murderer, so then he wouldn't be buried by Yikaver Beveso. He wouldn't be buried with his household. He would have been buried in the section of the cemetery that is for people who are at Rotskin. And so the idea is that he was still given a proper burial. He was given a proper burial. The Radak explains that because he was a accomplished officer in the Israeli, you know, in the Israelite army, that you couldn't, it was a big picture. You couldn't discount all the good that he did. And that even as he was a complex figure, he had to be punished by being put to death. But in his burial, he was given honor. And the Radak says that's something that we didn't necessarily have to, we don't have to have a hint to that when it came to, when it came to Adoniyahu, because since Adoniyahu was one of David's sons, you know, it goes without saying that Adoniyahu received a respectful burial. But Yoav, maybe you would have thought not, and it might also extend by the idea being that if someone is put to death because they rebelled against the king. So the law is that all of that individual's possessions don't follow through to the next generation, to the Yarshim, but they actually go to the property of the king. And that also didn't have, right? So he's buried in his house. His children got to keep what he had. Pasuk Lamed Hey, it almost sounds like immediate, and maybe in the back of our minds, this will explain something in a second. Vayitein ha-melech es Benayahu ben Yoyada tachtov al tzava. The melech, Shlomo, placed Benayahu ben Yoyada in place of him, tachtov, in place of him, meaning in place of Yoav al tzava, in the place of Yoav over the army. So that might explain why Benayahu was hesitant. He's hesitant to kill Yoav, because maybe Benayahu saw the writing on the wall that he's going to be replacing Yoav. And, you know, how does it look if he's the one who kills Yoav? And so perhaps he tries to get Yoav to have some type of negotiation. But in the end, obviously, it didn't happen and he had to carry it out. And he becomes in charge of the tzava for Shlomo. And at the same time, we close the loop in terms of Kohen Gadol, Ves Tzadok HaKohen, Nasan HaMelech, Tachas of Yasar, and to the position of Kohen Gadol, HaKohen, right, the Tzadok HaKohen, that, right, the king had given over in place of Evyasar, and we had already seen, we had seen Tzadok kind of acting like Kohen Gadol, to a certain extent, that when David, there was a time when David needed, we mentioned this before, but when David needed the Urim V'Tumim to dialogue with Hashem, that it didn't work for Evyasar, but it did work for Tzadok. So Tzadok had already kind of been like Kohen Gadol, but now it's official. Evyasar is under house arrest in Anasos, and Tzadok is now the acting Kohen Gadol, and that the position of Kohen Gadol will now go forth in the family of Tzadok.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Does that mean now you have to wait, like, is Evyasar out of the picture and now it's Tzadok?
Probably. I don't know if anyone, I don't know if, I never heard that question asked.
I don't plan to go anytime soon.
No, but it's a great question. That's a good question. Maybe you're the first one to ask it. That what I mean, if there was an individual who was in the Ir Mikla at that time,
right.
He would presumably it would change, okay. Right? The did it ever happen? Did it, you know, in the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, there was definitely time periods where they went through Kohanim Gedolim like water, because the position was bought. It was there were tzedukim involved. There was the question is at that time were the Ari Miklat fully functioning? But I imagine if someone was removed from power of Kohen Gadol without, let's say, dying, would it then just trend? Yeah, I don't know.
Did the Kohen Gadol have to be a Mashiach to be have the power
of Ir Miklat?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, did Ir Miklat apply when the Kohen Gadol wasn't as authentic? I don't know. We have homework. So if you recall, David had given Shlomo at least a number of directives of who to deal with, one of them being Yoav, and the other one in terms of a negative. He had Barzillai, who in the family of Barzillai that he was supposed to take care of, which presumably he did. But the kind of, because Adoniah pushed forward and asked for Avishag, that got the ball rolling in terms of dealing with Adoniah. Then he dealt with Avyasar, dealing with Yoav. And, you know, so in Shlomo's mind, it's almost like I've already done most of the list that my father asked me. So he draws, he gives his attention to the third agenda item, which was Shimi ben Gera, who had cursed David during the rebellion of Avshalom, even though this Shimi ben Gera was not involved. As far as we know, he was not involved in the uprising of Adoniah and in the subsequent, you know, request of Adoniah to marry Avishag. But Shlomo still, at least in the way the pasuk is presenting it, it seems to be within the same context. The Shlomo, I don't want to say it because it's like we're dealing about taking, you know, punishing people. Like Shlomo's on a roll. You know, this is what David had kind of told him to do. Specifically in the beginning of his being king, perhaps in order, as the pasuk's going to close the story by saying how now Shlomo's kingdom was established, and so kind of he had to take care of the loose ends that could have been the downfall of his new monarchy. So he continues that by addressing Shimi ben Gera, pasuk lamed vav. Vayishlach hamelech, the king sent word. Vayikra l'Shimi, and he called Shimi. Presumably, Shimi was living back in the land of Binyamin, where he came from. Vayomer lo, and he said to Shimi ben Gera, Bnei lecha vayis b'Yerushalayim. Build for yourself a home in Yerushalayim. V'yashavta sham, and you will live there. V'lo teitzei misham aneh v'ana. And you shall not go from there. Aneh v'ana, Matthias Tzion says, it means lakan lakan. You're not able to go anywhere. To here, to there. Some type of house arrest. This sounds, to some extent, it sounds similar to what Shlomo had told Avyasar the Kohen. To Avyasar, he said, you know, go there. But he never really said this part about how you're not allowed to leave there, and then the terms of what happens to you if you leave. Pasuk Lamed Zayin.
Why does he have to leave Yerushalayim? Why can't he stay under house arrest in his current house?
So Shlomo, like you keep your friends close and your enemies closer. That Shlomo understands that Shimon ben Gera was a very wise individual. He made an error. He miscalculated the rebellion of Avshalom. He miscalculated that Avshalom could fail and that David could come back to power. So he took advantage of the moment and he cursed David. He threw stones at David, not thinking that David would ever come back to power, and that ended up being his downfall. But it didn't take away from the fact that he was an impressive fellow, And we even see that when the rebellion is over and David is able to come back and he's coming towards the Yarden, so Shimi ben Gera comes with like 1,000 members of the tribe of Benjamin to beg forgiveness from David. And it's at that moment where he's put David in a very hard spot, because if David wants to kill him in front of 1,000 people from the tribe of Benjamin, in the back of everyone's mind, the tribe that has the least favor towards David, because he and his tribe of Yehuda had disposed their tribe from a position of power. And so Shimi ben Gera, it's like a great PR move, in the sense that he's begging David for forgiveness, and David almost has to extend him forgiveness, because if not, what does David look like? Maybe David's going to go ahead and take retribution against everyone who was on the side of Avshalom. That was a sizable percentage of the people. It would not have been good for... David almost had to extend the olive branch and accept his apology in order to show the country that he was ready to accept everyone's apology. So Shimi was very, very bright and very, you know, maybe sly. And that if... So Shlomo perhaps understood that if he stays where he is, he could become too powerful. So let me bring him to Yerushalayim, where he'll be under my and my entourage, under our watch. Right? So he says to Shimi, build your house in Yerushalayim, you'll dwell there. You're not allowed to go anywhere. And there's teeth. Pasuk Lamed Zayin. V'haya biyom tzeisecha, and it will be on the day that you leave. V'yavarta es nachal Kidron, and you cross over the Kidron Valley. So maybe there's an idea that he wasn't under strict house arrest, but he had to be around the area of Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim at that time refers to, you know, what we call Ir David, the lower city. And you cross over the Kidron Valley. Yadoa teida, you shall surely know, ki mos tamus, you'll be put to death. Damcha yeh beroshcha, your blood will be on your head. That'll be your fault. These are the terms. And clearly Shlomo is stating these terms because of the tzivu, because of the command that David had given him. And David had kind of given him, kind of said to him, you need to figure out a way to bring about Shimi's downfall. So here he does. He says, he gives him terms the understanding is that he's enlisting him in a type of an oath, of a shvua. And Shimi accepts in Pasuk Lamechez, Vayomer Shimi le'amelech, Tov hadavar. Shimi says to the king, Tov hadavar, this is good. Kasher diber Adoni HaMelech, as my master the king speaks, Ken yase avdecha, so shall your servant do. He's referring to Shlomo in a very humble way. He's referring to himself in a humble way. Vayeshev Shimi b'Yerushalayim yamim rabim. Shimi lives in Yerushalayim yamim rabim. Many days usually means not just days. It means even years. So this the arrangement seems to be working. He's under some form of house arrest. He's there, and Shlomo's team can observe him and make sure that he's not causing any trouble, and everything seems to be fine. Pasuk Lamites. Vayhi miketz shalosh shanim, 3 years, right? So yamim rabim can even mean 3 years. At the end of 3 years, vayivrechu shnei avadim l'shimi, two of Shimi's servants run away. Where do they run? El Achish ben Ma'acha Melech Gas, to Achish, the son of Ma'acha, who is the king in Gas. It's in the land of the Plishtim, on the, you know, near Gaza. Ve'yagidu l'Shimi le'mor, and it was told to Shimi, Hine avadecha begas. Your servants are in Gas. Now, I didn't see the Mefarshim say anything here of, you know, who these servants were, why they run to Gas. But what seems to be clear is they become the the shlichim, they become the messengers or the puppets to carry out Shimi actually violating the oath of the oath that Shlomo enlisted in it, and that, you know, kind of we never know the bigger plan, but here you have something that seems to be so innocent, in the sense that, you know, this is not, it's not news breaking that a slave runs away to a foreign land, but it's significant because this is the details that lead to that lead to Shlomo fulfilling the word of David and finally taking care of Shimi. And that, you know, while we talk about how bright Shimi was, he makes the innocent mistake, maybe because it's been 3 years of peace and quiet. Pasuk Mem, Vayakam Shimi, Shimi gets up, Vaychavosh es chamaro, he saddles his donkey, Vayelech Gata el Achish, he goes to Gas, he goes to Achish, Levakesh es avadav, to search for his servants, Vayelech Shimi, Shimi went, Vayaveh es avadav, Migas, and he was successful. He got his servants back from Gas. I don't know if anyone ever used these psukim, but it seems to be like from a Musar perspective, you know, you I don't know what the right expression in English is, but you got the small victory, but you lost the battle. Meaning not just that, but it's almost like from a perspective, childlike, that he lost sight of the big picture. He saw, like, you know, that Shimi Ben Gera, he got back his two servants.
Yeah. But he got killed, didn't
but in the end, he's going to get killed for it.
The point that the Malbim makes here is that Shlomo originally said, you'll be killed if you cross over the Kidron. And he didn't cross over the Kidron yet. He retrieved them without going over the Kidron. But Shlomo also said, honor to honor. So that gave him a reason to kill.
Ah, so he thought he was outwising.
He thought he was okay.
It just seems so easy to follow this oath. And, like, how can you make a mistake like that? If, like, because you forgot? It just seemed like your explanation makes sense.
He thought...
Thank you.
There you go. He thought. So he thought he was outwitting.
It's inconceivable to me that he forgot. He didn't think he was doing anything wrong.
Yeah,
it's more that, like that. Right. Is a,
but time sometimes just, you know, you
softens the.
Yeah, you know, the severity. Meaning, you know, it. You
if
don't
I take two steps out. No one's going to mind. I've been so good up until now. And it,
correct. You become your mind becomes complacent. So he gets the servants. So that sounds like a success. But pasuk mem aleph, vayugad lo Shlomo. It was told to Shlomo, ki halach Shimi miYerushalayim gas v'yashov, that Shimi went from Yerushalayim to Gas and came back. And you almost say, like, there's a certain audacity in coming back. Meaning, like, maybe run away. But, like, he comes back. Like,
because he didn't think he did anything wrong.
Right.
If he didn't come back, what would be the purpose of catching his slaves?
Right. Yeah. Right.
He took them with him, so he'll have slaves on the run.
I think it also shows that when you have good help, you don't let them go.
You know, I didn't see someone say that or this, that... It could be that while Shimi Ben Gera has seen Shlomo act, Shlomo's still young, and maybe he underestimates Shlomo's willingness to act. And there was some level, Chazal talk about that while Shimi was in Yerushalayim, he did impart some wisdom. Shlomo learned from Shimi, and so maybe Shimi Ben Gera just thought that Shlomo, you know, even though we agreed to these terms, Shlomo would never have the guts to actually do it. And maybe thinking just like David didn't deal with it, maybe Shlomo will have that same inability to act. But Shlomo steps up. He continues to step up to the plate. That in so many ways, we'll see. There may be some that we could argue about, but in many ways, Shlomo seems to really be stepping into the shoes appropriately of being the new king.
Now, no one kind of gave these slaves a push to run away.
So again, that's what
do in terms of
right. So I, when you so when we say no one, no one meaning it's like divine, meaning whatever you know, the slaves had to make their own decision. But what was the catalyst that encouraged the slaves to make that decision? So it's like a little bit of a window, like you know, like the Purim story. That each step dealt with led to something else, which leads to something else. So now here in Pasuk Mem Beis, Vayishlach Hamelech Vayikra L'Shimi. So the Melech called Shlomo. He sends Vayikra L'Shimi. He calls for Shimi. Vayomer Lav, and he says to him, "Hallo Hishbaticha BaHashem. Did I not enlist you in a swear with Hashem?" Which was that wasn't the exact language that we saw when they were talking, right? He just said, "You're not allowed to leave, and if you leave, you'll get killed." And Shimi said yes, but now the pasuk is telling us that when they did that, they made a shvua in the name of Hashem. V'aid b'chalei mor, and I caused you to kind of testify on that day. V'yom tzeischa, on that saying that on the day that you go out, v'halach the ana, and you go anywhere, l'kan u'l'kan, without mentioning the Kidron, without mentioning the Nachal Kidron, Yodoa tidak himos tamus, you shall surely know that you will die. Vatomer elai, and you said to me, Tov hadavar shamati, Tov hadavar, the matter is good, shamati, I have heard, which means you accepted the terms of the oath. Umadua lo shamarta, pasuk mem gimel, so why is it that you did not guard Eshvuas Hashem, this oath of God? The mitzvah asher tzivisi alecha, and this command that I gave upon you, which maybe is hinting that there are kind of two levels here. On the one hand, that you violated a shvuah with Hashem, so you have to be held accountable for that. But even if there wasn't a shvuah, when the king gives you a command, you must follow the command of the king. And if you don't follow the command of the king, maybe you're considered to be moreid b'malchus, your rebellion. And the punishment for rebelling against the king is death. Pasuk mem dalet, vayomer hamelech el shimi, Ata yadata es kol hara asher yada levavcha asher asisa leDavid avi. Now we come to that full circle. So the king says to Shimi, you know all of the evil that you know in your heart that you did to David my father. Veheshiv Hashem ra'ascha v'roshecha. Hashem is returning your evil to your head upon your head, meaning for the fact that when David was on the run from Avshalom and he cursed him and he threw stones at him, that in and of itself was Morid v'Malchus. That was, and he was deserving of death. But it didn't happen then. The punishment is happening now. But recognize, this is not Shlomo fighting for Shlomo's cause. It's Shlomo fighting for the honor of his father. And he's making sure that Shimi understands that. And he kind of says in third person, he says about himself, "V'hamelech Shlomo Baruch," the king Shlomo will be blessed. Whether that means that for acting this way, the people will bless Shlomo for acting for the honor of his father, not for his own honor. Shlomo will be blessed. "V'kisei David yeh nachon," that the throne of David shall be established. "Lefnei Hashem Adolam," before Hashem, forever. Pasuk Memva, Vayitzav Hamelech as Ben Yoh Ben Yoyada, you know, Nebuchadnezzar Ben Yoh Ben Yoyada, this he's always called upon to be the hitman. He commands him, Vayitze Vayivka Bo Vayamos, he struck him and he died. Interestingly, we're not told about his burial, so maybe Shimi Ben Gera did not receive, I don't know if anyone, I didn't see it, but maybe he did not receive the same level of honorable burial that Yoav did. V'hamamlacha nechona biyad Shlomo. And the kingdom was nachon, the Mitzvah of Sion tells us, means like mitukan, like fixed. It was firmly established in the hands of Shlomo, the loose ends, the places of risk, in terms of Yoav, in terms of Shimi, in terms of Evyasar, in terms of Adoniah, they've all been taken care of by the young king, and now it'll be firmly established. Rashi says, what does it mean that the kingdom is established? Lo ne'anash al kolela. Shlomo is not going to be punished for any of these things. There may be things in the future that actions of Shlomo that he and his monarchy is punished for, but it's none of these things. Shlomo was considered to be proper in each of these actions, and that allows his kingdom to continue. So on the one hand, you have it as he's not held accountable for these things in a negative way, so therefore his kingdom can continue, versus the, and in addition to the practical sense that the risks, right? Everything is going well for Shlomo. David had really done all of the hard work in terms of expanding the country and getting peace with the neighbors and through war and through treaty and things of that nature. And the keys to the land have been given to the young king. There were some loose ends. Those loose ends needed to be tied up, which is why David specifically ended his life by giving that command to Shlomo. Shlomo goes ahead and takes care of it, and now the monarchy, or Shlomo's time as rule could be advanced to the next level. So Be'ez Hashem, next time we'll continue with Perek Gimel.